Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Matthias Wadner, along with my co-host, Will Lomas. We are back after the Titans' bye week. They'll be taking on the Colts in week 7. We'll talk about the Colts in a little bit, but before that, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the things that have happened over the weekend and recently as well. The most recent thing is Delanie Walker today, on Tuesday, officially retired as a Titan after a couple years out of the league. Following that, I think his last season was the one where he got injured, right? That was 2018.
No. Yeah. I think his last season was 2019.
Correct. Yeah. 2018 was the one where he broke his leg, I think, against the Dolphins week 1. Man, I remember that. That was such a deflating, that was one of the most deflating games I think ever. Yeah. Right.
The worst game I've ever watched. Like, so many terrible things happened. Like, that was the Taylor Lewan body bag game. That was the Marcus, like, hit
nerve
his
injury,
like,
yeah, or
his
whatever
elbow, and it's like he couldn't feel his arm anymore really after that, and he was screwed up for the whole year. Then Delanie had his injury, and this was after it was 2019, so it was the start of where Titans fans really thought that the team was going to go to the playoffs every year. Like, where it was like, okay, this is a team that's built, you know, there's good talent, like, blah, blah, blah. And there was, but it's like, you know, at that point you had, I believe, DeMarco Murray was still on the team, and you had DeMarco Murray and like a young Derrick Henry, but like not super young. Like, I think he was in his third year. I don't remember. Anyway, the point is, it's like you had like a team that you're like, okay, this team's, you know, it's going to work, blah, blah, blah. And then just a nightmare of a game with a weather delay in the middle and like major injuries like across the board. And it was just a nightmare.
Yeah, it kind of sucks that he left by the time the Titans really started finding consistent success. He was still part of some pretty good teams that did make the playoffs. I can't remember exactly which ones he was on and he was actually playing for, because he suffered so many injuries those last couple of seasons. But man, what a great tight end he was. He's probably not the best tight end in Titans history. I think probably still Frank Wycheck. Although I if you said that Delanie was the best, I wouldn't argue with you really, because what he provided for the offense in times where the receivers were just not good, like they couldn't get anything going, Delanie was essentially the number one option in the passing game for a lot of years. And this was like his early 30s. It's not like he was a young up and coming player that was going in his prime. Like, his prime was 31, 32, 33 years old. And he was producing like an elite tight end. He was a top five tight end in the NFL, I think, in those very best years as a tight end. And I think I think he's going to stick out a lot in, you know, those conversations that we have in a couple of years where we think about previous Titans that we were in love with. And Delaney is definitely one that's going to pop up.
Yeah, like you look at Frank Wycheck's numbers and it's like there are more solid seasons there. I think he had, let me look at it real quick. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years in a row with 500 or more yards, which is really good for a tight end, especially with the way, you know, the Titans have historically played football. But I was looking up Delaney Walker stats. We all, I think, remember that he had 4 seasons in a row with 800 plus yards, which is crazy. But the one that stood out to me is he had, I think it was 2007, one of those years, right in the middle of like his dominance, where he had 1,088 yards, and the best season that AJ Brown had with the Titans was 1,075 yards. So it's like, imagine that as good as AJ Brown was/is, Delaney Walker outproduced him as a tight end in an offense with, you know, no disrespect, but with Marcus Mariota and with a lot of disrespect, Terry Rubisky, and, you know, that group of, you know, talent around him. So, I mean, he was awesome. Like, I personally would rather have Delaney Walker. I think what he did is more impressive, and I think he would have continued to do that. There was no drop-off. He just got injured and couldn't hang anymore. But, I mean, he was great in the run game. You could line him up anywhere. I mean, he just he was very much the connective tissue that sort of bridged the gap. But not that he was there when the Titans were good, but he helped kind of – Taylor Wan specifically talked about how, you know, they were friends when – I mean, they're still friends now, but how close they were when Taylor was a rookie and all that kind of stuff, and how they would go out and do stuff, but then Walker would always be like – in the steam room working out, constantly trying to get better, and how that was important to him. Because I mean, there were a lot of guys just collecting paychecks on the Titans roster when, I mean, pretty much every other free agent that Rustin Webster signed was just collecting a paycheck. So he was the rare good evaluation and somebody who did help with the culture change. If Mike Vrabel would have been the head coach, when he'd been signed, Walker would have never left the field. And, you know, that was sort of the case anyway, but he's very much a Mike Vrabel guy.
Yeah, it would have been awesome to see him in his prime with Corey Davis and A.J. Brown whenever they could all be healthy at the same time. That would have definitely been something to see, but unfortunately never happened. But we only have great memories of Delaney. And he really was such a versatile player. I remember it was hilarious. I used to play Madden back in the day, and when he was just coming in the NFL with the 49ers, he was their kick returner. And I would play a game in Madden. I would see this Walker guy returning a kick with the 49ers, and I'm like, hold on, who is this? And then I check, and it's a tight end returning kicks. I'm like, what is happening here? But that's just the type of player he was. He wasn't really like very tall. He was like 6 feet tall, but he was so fast and so strong. And he was really, really a unique player. There are not a lot of players that are like him on the pass and on the NFL right now. So congrats on a great career to Delaney Walker. And hopefully we'll get some more players of his caliber going forward. The other thing that happened over the bye week that we need to talk about, because I'm sure we have a lot of Volunteers fans that listen to us and alums also, and Will, you were alum as well. You were probably over the moon when the Tennessee Volunteers beat Alabama 52-49 in what I'm being told is one of the best games ever. I only watched the final 2 minutes of this one, but man, did I tune in at the perfect time. And obviously, I'm an honorary Volunteers fan. Will has graced me with that honor. So I can pretty much say that I had a lot to do with this one. Plus, it's always good to see. It's always good to see Alabama lose. Like, I don't know why. I kind of feel bad that I'm cheering against these 18-year-olds who have, like, I have nothing against, but Nick Saban is just, I don't like him. I don't know what to say. Plus, I don't like when teams are like dynasties and they just win every single year. It gets really boring. And this Volunteers team is, they're pretty good, man. They're pretty good.
Yeah. So let's talk about it. There's a lot of stop the nonsense mixed in here with it, which is perfect because it's a bye week. So it's not like I feel like I'm going to talk over because we should be covering something that the Titans did. But this was sort of the culmination of, you know, the season. So let me set the stage for everybody. The season laid out perfectly for the Vols because the Vols always have the hardest schedule in the country. Like, they have to play their division, they have to play the SEC, and then they have to also play the West team that they play is Alabama. Like, they schedule it every, it's like they intentionally play Alabama every year, which for 15 years has been a death sentence to any sort of hope you could possibly have. But, you know, this year they start off strong against Ball State. The next week, they go on the road against a ranked team in Pitt, and, you know, they get after the passer. You know, they bang up, you know, both quarterbacks, really, and sort of get that groove going. Then week three, they play Akron, and I don't have a problem with it, but, you know, Cedric Tillman gets injured in that game because Akron hits him with a dirty hit. I don't have a problem with it because that's the same game where Jalin Hyatt had 150 yards or whatever, and that was important later. You know, the Vols needed to know how to win without Cedric Tillman. So then you go on to Florida, and this is the first sort of hurdle that you have to overcome as a Vols fan is, obviously, for the better part of 15 years as well, Florida, you play Florida, and there's an excruciating way to lose. It's a backup quarterback in the second half. It's a Hail Mary. It's, a fourth and long or third and long or whatever it was where you have the game in control the whole time, and then you just two of your guys run into each other. It's a lot of different ways to lose, and they're all equally painful and miserable because at halftime, it always feels like there's a chance that this is the year that, you know, Florida loses and that Tennessee gets their momentum back, whatever. So Tennessee dominates that game. It's not close. Like, the scoreboard says it is, but it's really not. And had they not gotten conservative in the fourth quarter and basically packed it in, it would have, you know, the margin of victory would have skyrocketed. But Florida gets an onside kick that they, you know, make a drive and they end the game on an interception. So the Vols win a game, but they learn a lesson. You know, they learn you have to stay aggressive. It doesn't matter how much you're up. That'll be important for later. They also get the whole our home advantage, like the home atmosphere of Neyland when it's rocking is just at a whole different level. Like, you know, you'll see this in cut-ups that you see this week from people that have the All-22. I think Dane Brugler tweeted it out where he had a hard time watching the end zone film because the camera was shaking the whole fourth quarter when he was trying to watch Bryce Young, which is, it's awesome, and it's a testament to the fans. And, you know, it proved that it mattered to pack out a stadium. Okay, fast forward. You take a bye week, and then you play LSU. And you don't play LSU before your bye week because, you know, that's just the way the schedule is. But it also keeps you from having a trap game against LSU, which we've seen is a good team. They stomped out Florida last week. I think it was like 42 to something. It's something in the low 30s or high 20s. I mean, it was a good margin of victory. And, it wasn't as close as the score looks. So you avoid that and you stomp them and, you know, you learn to keep your foot on the pedal, you know. It's never close against LSU. You win against ranked LSU on the road, another good SEC win. So that's the stage for this Alabama game. And, you know, Alabama starts off with the ball. Is that right? I believe Alabama started off with the ball. Anyway, loud, whatever. If you've seen the game, you know kind of what happens. Like, the Vols storm out, score in their first three possessions, under 2 minute scoring drives each time, just absolutely ripping them to shreds. But they don't get conservative. Like, the, you know, they understand what they are. They continue to be aggressive, and then they stack points as much as they can. Fast forward to, I believe it was 42-42, and look, Hendon Hooker is the Heisman favorite in everybody's book right now. He's a superstar. They had one miscommunication where that he and I don't remember if it was Jabari, I think it was Small, Jabari Small, the running back, they miscommunicate within their own 20. A ball just ends up laying right in the middle of the field, and Dallas picks it up and runs it in for a touchdown. So Alabama scores, and they're up by 7 in a game that they had no business being up, because nobody in red had outplayed anybody in orange, and that would continue throughout the rest of the game. But it felt like one of those times where, had they not been battle tested, had they not, you know, faced Pitt and had to win a tie game in overtime, had they not dealt with, you know, Florida, who was punching them back when they were trying to punch early, had they not dealt with all that early, they wouldn't really know how to respond. But they get the ball back, they score, it's 49-49. Then Alabama goes, and in sort of a weird reversal of fortunes, Alabama misses their field goal because they decide to get away from what's working, which is the running game, or just anything to Jahmyr Gibbs. And, you know, they kick a field goal, they miss it, there's 15 seconds left on the clock, but the Vols have 2 timeouts. And every Vol fan knew what was coming next, or at least I would assume they knew, because it felt so clear to me at the time. There was no doubt that they were going to get in field goal range. And Hooker was amazing, drove, I don't know, 40 yards in 2 plays. And then they go to set up a 40-yard field goal. And I personally didn't think they were going to make it. Like, everything in my bones told me they were going to miss it, and it was going to be heartbreak. And then you have to try to go to overtime with them, and it's just, it's going to be, you know, more of the same, except you don't get the vertical aspect of the field, which is where Tennessee had been killing them with Hyatt, who also looked like a superstar and got his 10th touchdown when he caught 5 touchdowns on 6 receptions. Anyway, it felt like it was going to be one of those games that Alabama didn't deserve to win, the rare game, but where they didn't deserve to win, but where they walked away just because things broke their way in the end, the way they always do. But that wasn't the case. You know, the kick, I think, got tipped a little bit because it came out essentially sideways, but just enough, and it went over the crossbar. And then everything in my bones told me there's going to be a flag, or Nick Saban will have taken another timeout before the kick. You know, something's wrong. But no, I mean, it was cigars up, and the Vols, you know, maybe the most beautiful rushing of the field ever when you look at what it looked like to have 100,000+ people's waterfalling and cascading down the stands and onto the field. And it's one of those feelings where nobody should ever have to feel this, because you have to build up 15 years of pain before you can sort of get this. You breathe out for the first time in a decade and a half. But for year after year, even the times when the Vols have beaten Florida, or the Vols have, you know, done well early, it's always like, yeah, but when you play Alabama, you end up losing 52-0. And it happened like that forever. But last year, the Vols were leading at halftime. Alabama came back, and, you know, that was never a team that should have beaten Alabama. But the fact that they showed fight and they got ahead of them early was promising. I didn't know if this was the year, or if it would be next year, or when. But it felt like Tennessee was going to be able to beat Alabama at some point. But just the growth from 2 years ago, where the entire program seems like it's on fire and you have to deal with all that, and then, you know, you're 18 months later and now you should be the number one team in the country, because there's no way in the world Georgia's played a harder schedule. They've looked worse than Tennessee. They almost lost to Missouri. They let, I think it was Kent State, move the ball on them well. Like, I'm not saying the Vols are perfect, but they're the only team in the country who's played and beaten four ranked teams, and they've done it against five teams, I believe. So that's, you know, I guess neither here nor there. And then Ohio State getting a pass at two for no reason also is insane to me. But, you know, somebody said it on the radio that if the Vols win their games, they won't have to worry about where they're ranked and all that. That's true until you start thinking about the scenarios of what happens if there's a one-loss Alabama and a one-loss Georgia team and a one-loss Tennessee team. Because, you know, rankings will very much be important in that scenario. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's all – that part's, you know, to be determined. You got to finish your schedule and all that kind of stuff. But it's exciting because for the first time in my lifetime, you're really thinking about – I mean, not my lifetime. I guess they won the national championship. But in my adult or teenage lifetime, they've gotten to a place where you can seriously think about, you know, playoff slash championship aspirations. And even if you're not going to make it, which, I mean, we don't know, but just to be able to have that hope is the entire reason why you have college sports in the first place. Like, you just want to have that expectation where when you get to a certain point in the season, there's a chance that you could be one of the 10 teams that's actually possible, you know, as college football champions. So having the number one offense in the country, putting up 52 points against Alabama and being the only team to do it, put 50 plus points on Alabama in the past 100 years, and to do it twice, because I think they did it in 2006, 2003, one of those. But I mean, every way, you know, to win in a way where they had their best players, the Vols didn't have all their best players, and you win in a game where everybody says, well, you can't outscore Alabama. Like, you got to play some defense. You really don't. You really, really don't. You just have to, you know, have the ball last. You know, so it was all fantastic. And it's an exciting and interesting time to be a Vols fan. And the future's, like, crazy bright, too. They have a five-star quarterback coming in. Milton has a rocket arm. And, you know, we can talk about his placement whenever, but if you're a fast wide receiver and you're transferring from any school in the country, you've got to say, okay, that guy just put up 200 yards and five touchdowns against Alabama and probably made himself millions and millions of dollars in NIL deals and draft status. But, you know, what can I do there? So it's, you know, we'll see what happens. But right now it's just euphoria in Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm happy for you, happy for all the Vols fans that listen to us. Definitely a great vibe surrounding that team and just the organization as a whole. I hope it goes well. I really do. You guys have endured a lot of suffering, as have I, as a Miami Hurricanes fan. I mean, geez, oh, man, I don't want to talk about them, so we'll just stick to the Volunteers. I always pick them in March Madness, and they always let me down. So
well, the cool thing about Miami is, like, y'all, like, not to disparage all the Vols and all that, but it's like y'all have cool people that come out in the draft, like, pretty frequently, it feels like. I mean, you know, I remember we would watch the and talk about in the group chats, like, the Russo and Roche and Jalen Phillips. Like, we would watch them, like, play and just how freaky they were and all of that. Like, I mean, the Vols have had Derek Barnett, Alvin Kamara, and some wide receivers that didn't – like, we don't get to enjoy the guys that we produce. Like, they're always better in the NFL than they are at Tennessee, and that's pretty brutal where, you know, all these guys are like, I'm from the University of Tennessee, and then half the fans are like, I don't remember them playing there. So – at the very least, you get to enjoy your really good players.
That is true. That is true. But I do think there are a lot of parallels between the Volunteers and the Hurricanes over the past decade or so. We've had some coaches that have just been brutal. There's just no other word to really explain it. But hopefully this is a turning point in the Vols' future, and we'll see about the Hurricanes. I mean, they barely beat Virginia Tech, and they're unranked, so it's not looking too good for us. But we do have a new coach. Maybe maybe he'll get the ship righted eventually. We're going to take an ad break here, and then we're going to come back and preview the Colts game, as well as talk about the NFL as a whole, because it's definitely something worth discussing.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back into No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. So let's talk about the NFL. I think it's definitely a topic that we have to discuss because, yeah, the Titans haven't been great this year. I don't think they've looked particularly great. They haven't looked like an elite team, but the level of play in the NFL right now is disgusting. And like, there's actual evidence to back up what we're seeing, because it does feel like every week, particularly in primetime games, unfortunately, we keep having to watch the Denver Broncos, who are an absolute disaster. They are one of the worst coach teams I've seen in a really long time. And Russell Wilson looks absolutely cooked, but we keep having to watch them. And because their defense is really good, we keep having to watch the other team's offenses also struggle mightily, and it turns into an awful product. And it's not just the Broncos and whoever they play. It's all around the NFL. I saw a tweet the other day that fantasy football scoring is the lowest it's been in 13 years. And we're at a time where it's supposed to be the complete opposite. Like, all of the penalty flags, all the penalty calls, the way the NFL is designed and has been going to over the past decade has benefited the offenses, yet they suck. There's like, what, 3-4 good offenses, like really good offenses in the entire NFL, and everyone else, it seems like they have no clue. They have no clue how to gain yards. And once they get in the red zone, they don't know. They don't have any idea how to put the ball in the end zone and actually score touchdowns. So I don't know. Like, I told my dad while I was watching the Sunday games, I was like, the Titans might win the Super Bowl. They might not look good the entire year. They might come away with a Super Bowl win, because I don't know. There is no good team. There are no good teams. Like, really good teams in the NFL. I would say the Buffalo Bills are. I think they're the best team. I don't think it's close. I think the Eagles are very good as well. But the Bills, just with Josh Allen, he looks incredibly dynamic, has a rocket arm. Obviously, his mobility is a huge plus. But they also have a fantastic defense and really good coordinators to back that up. The Eagles do as well, but I'm a little skeptical on their coaching staff. They're a little bit young, and Jalen Hurts hasn't looked particularly amazing the last couple of weeks. And the first couple of weeks might have been a little bit of a fluke. But you go through these other teams across the NFL, like, who is good? Like, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes. They have a good offense, not an amazing offense that we've seen over the past few seasons, the Tyreek Hill loss is actually affecting them. They don't have a lot of receivers that are kind of, you know, minimizing that loss. The Ravens keep losing to like these really close games. The Giants keep winning all these close games, but they're not talented at all. They just are very well coached, and they keep sneaking away with these one-score wins. I don't know, man. Like, what do you think of the NFL right now? I really think we're in a point where it's the worst it's been in a really long time.
Some of it is that we're in this transition period with quarterbacks, right? Like, Russell Wilson has dropped off pretty significantly. Tom Brady doesn't look very good. Like, and he has no offensive line, so he's getting wrecked all the time.
He doesn't. Aaron, he also doesn't want to be out there. I don't know why he came back. He's just mad all the time.
Yeah.
He's going to Robert Kraft's wedding on a game week. Like,
on a Friday.
Why did he come back? I don't understand.
Like, and then Aaron Rodgers, like, seems disinterested. And so you have all these, like, Matt Ryan is terrible. Like, we'll talk more about him later. But, you know, he has 7 interceptions and 11 fumbles lost. That's pretty, pretty bad. I mean, like, I don't know how else to put it. But, like, the kids who were supposed to come in and be saviors, like the Trevor Lawrences and the Kyler Murrays and, you know, the Justin Fields, like all those guys, like they're all like, I mean, Kyler Murray is a little bit different because he actually has shown potential, but it's like, there's this big, I mean, remember when we had the Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen draft. It was like, those were all supposed to be franchise changing quarterbacks Josh Allen is the only one still on the same team and he looks great. But since then, it's also a bunch of quarterbacks who don't look very good. Like, Mac Jones looked good last year, and he was clearly the best rookie quarterback. Now he's injured, and Bailey Zappi's in, and it looks like he might take his spot. So, you just, like, there's just no good. You know, look at Justin Herbert. Like, you know, he's awesome at, you know, putting up yards and all that kind of stuff. But for whatever reason, I mean, he has plenty of weapons. He's got a good defense, but they just don't, for whatever reason, whether it's coaching, which some of it is, or whether it's a guy who can move the ball between the 20s really well but can't move it in the red zone, like whatever it is, like they're not getting the job done. And you know that they won against the Broncos, but barely. And I mean, they're 4-2, but there's a real chance that they don't make the playoffs, even though they are 4-2, just because of how they've actually looked and all the injuries they have. So, you know, there's no young guys stepping up at quarterback. There's no, the older guys are getting worse. And anytime there's an offensive coordinator with a glimmer of potential of figuring things out and, you know, being a head coach one day, they get hired a year too early and they screw up their career. Like, Arthur Smith is different because he served as a assistant coach for like 8 years all across the Titans like team before he started out on defense. And that was before, you know, he got his offensive coordinator chance and he went 2 years and then he left. Like that makes sense. But there's so many guys who are 2 years removed from, you know, look at Vrabel. Like, I mean, he's different because he was defense, but he was a linebacker coach for 2 years and then a defensive coordinator for a year for the worst defense in the NFL, and he gets hired as a head coach. And, you know, that's worked out for the Titans because they had a good roster coming in and he didn't have to do a lot of the heavy lifting with the personnel decisions because the foundation was there. But all these guys, you know, the Hacketts of the world, like they talk so big in these interviews and these owners are so easily swayed that there's not a lot of guys who come in and can sustain anything anymore. So is the product, but I mean, I would argue, like, I don't care what happens on the field, like the product of not knowing what's going to happen and the parity in the NFL and all that makes football, you know, the most popular sport in America and easily my favorite sport by, you know, a mile. But like the product is certainly not what we expected it to be 2 years ago. So, you know, maybe some of that is, you know, good defense, but it's not like, you know, TJ Watt's out. Miles Garrett's been hurt, but he's still been good. Aaron Donald's great, but I mean, it's not like he's on a record pace. Like, it's not like it's all these defenses who were completely out of their mind right now. It, you know, it's just a lot of miscommunication, a lot of guys who are hurt, and it's hurting the league in terms of if you want to sell it as, you know, the excitement of college football, but you know, there's no bad teams. It's hard when Alabama, Tennessee are going, you know, the Tennessee wins 52-49. Like, it's hard to recreate that, you know, in a, let's see, what was the score? 12-9 Colts Broncos game. Like, I mean, or 15-12, like overtime, whatever their score was. Like, that's not really going to capture the same attention.
Yeah, I mean, over the weekend, people were, like, clamoring for more games like Colts-Jaguars because no one was playing defense. So Matt Ryan threw the ball 60 times because the Jaguars would not guard, would not defend the middle of the field. So Michael Pittman had, like, a million catches. And then Trevor Lawrence just scored, like, a couple of short touchdowns, rushing touchdowns. And, like, to us, given how bad the NFL has been offensively, like that was a shootout. It was like the shootout of the year. So yeah, it's bad. I think you're right about the NFL being in a transitional phase with these quarterbacks. You're right. I mean, think about it. Brady, Rodgers, Russell Wilson have been the guys over the past 10 plus years. Add Drew Brees to that, who just recently retired a couple of years ago. And yeah, we are in a transitional phase, but you're expecting some of these young guys to be better. Like you said, Kyler has shown flashes, but he's been terrible this year. He hasn't gotten helped by Cliff Kingsbury at all. But I mean, his limitations are really showing up. I mean, granted, he's like 5'8". What can we really expect from him? And then some of these other number one picks or high draft picks like Zach Wilson, Baker Mayfield, Trevor Lawrence has looked a little bit better, but those other guys are disasters. They are absolutely terrible. And add to all of this the fact that they're not being really helped by their coaching staffs. I think there's a lot of inexperienced coaches, a lot of unjustly hired coaches that I don't even know how they got their jobs. Add to that as well that the O-line play is pathetic in the NFL right now. I don't know what is going on. I don't know what they're teaching them. I think there's a talent disparity there. I think no one wants to be an O-line, an offensive lineman anymore. I think we've gotten to the point where everyone just wants to play wide receiver or defensive end or cornerback because those are the flashy positions. And I think we're starting to see what happens when that happens over a long period of time. So, man, I don't know. Like, if this continues, obviously we're going to keep watching because the NFL is just a monster in terms of audience and people watching the games. I watch just because, well, I have to do it for work, but I also am just fully into fantasy football, and I'll watch a terrible, you know, Bears Texans game because I have Damian Pierce on my team. Like, that's just the NFL, and it'll always be that way. But it, for the casual viewers, like, they are going to lose a lot of them if this continues.
Yeah, I looked up the starting quarterback ages, like, of who started four or more games this year. So the five oldest are Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, and Russell Wilson. And then I'll throw in Matt Stafford, who's six. Like, one of those quarterbacks is playing well, and that's Kirk Cousins. Like, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, Russell Wilson, and Matt Stafford are all playing very poorly. Then you look at the five youngest guys, and it's Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Davis Mills, Tua Tagovailoa, and Justin Herbert. And I don't know, I wouldn't say Herbert's playing exceptionally well. Tua was playing good, but it's like, you know, Tua's hurt. So Miami is suffering because they were really exciting early in the year. But it's like
Herbert is hurt too. He has a ribs thing.
So it's like, I mean, when your five youngest quarterbacks aren't really that marketable right now, and your five oldest quarterbacks aren't doing anything, it's like then you got guys sprinkled in the middle where it's like Carson Wentz, you know, Jacoby Brissett, Mariota, Cooper Rush, Jared Goff, Mitch Trubisky started four games. You know, it's just like, ugh. Like, there's just a lot of bad, you know, it's just, that's really all it is. It's like the NFL is driven by how well the quarterbacks play. And this will get remembered as, oh, I mean, we'll see. I mean, we're not halfway through the season or anything, but since it's the bye week, we're talking about it. But so far, this seems like a season where we're going to talk about how good the defenses were and all that. And it's really not that. It's just the quarterbacks are playing poorly for one reason or another.
100%, and it doesn't help that this past quarterback draft class was one of the worst, I think, in history. Kenny Pickett is just going to be a guy. I really don't see a lot of potential with him. Ritter, Willis haven't even played. Bailey Zappi has been the best rookie quarterback so far. So, man, it's not good. I think this next draft class is good for quarterbacks, I believe, from what I've read. So,
we've heard that before. So we'll see. We hear it every single
off season before. Yeah. So we'll see. Let's turn our attention to the Colts. I don't think we have to talk too much about them because we literally just played them a couple of weeks ago. The Titans got out to a big lead in the first half, then did their usual Titans things in the second half. But they ended up holding on. They got a lot of pressure on Matt Ryan. Did you see anything differently from the Colts this past Sunday when they beat the Jaguars in the final moments of that game with an Alec Pierce touchdown? Do you see anything different from the Colts that the Titans played against? I personally just thought, like I mentioned before, they were just throwing crossers all game because they realized Matt Ryan, first of all, cannot throw deep, cannot put any zip on passes over like 10 yards. If not, his receivers have to completely come back to the ball, and it sets them up for potential turnovers. Also, their O-line isn't playing well, so they're trying to get the ball out quickly. But that might have worked against the Jaguars. I don't think that'll work against the Titans.
Yeah, like they're starting Dennis Kelly at left tackle, which they made that change halfway through the game. I think they kept moving other tackles to right tackle. I didn't watch that closely, but I heard the announcers talking about something to that. But, you know, they threw 58 times, like which we said over and over. But it's crazy because looking at every other game this season, you can't throw 58 times with Matt Ryan at quarterback. Like, they got very lucky because there weren't, you know, Matt Ryan didn't have any fumbles in this game. He didn't have any interceptions. But that's because the Jaguars defense looked they looked so bad. Like, you watch that defense, they have no interest in tackling, like, anybody at all. Like, they're not, I mean, it's such a, like, both teams were terrible against the run. Like, there were so many plays where they just get gashed, and it's like, the defensive backs don't really look like they want to be there in the run game. Like, the linebackers are in the wrong spots. Like, they're getting moved on the lines. Like, and then you'll flip the script, and it's the same thing on the other side, where it's like both offensive lines look like they're just getting constantly bullied. Like, I don't know how these teams score. Like, I mean, I do because I watch, but it's like you watch and you're not overly impressed with anything that happens through the air. It's like, you know, Matt Ryan does a lot of, like you said, like a lot of crossers, and they have all those like heat maps where they just showed like. However many receptions that Pittman had, like seven or something, like it's like, or not seven, that was Campbell. He had like 12 or 13 or something. And it's like nine of them came like over the middle on crossing routes. And it's like, yeah, if you're just going to give up the middle of the field to these crossing routes and they don't want to even try to run the ball, then yeah, like you're just going to get eaten alive by that. But the weird thing is like, now they've got both running backs coming back this week, which on paper sounds like it should be a positive, but
no, I was legitimately just going to say when you finished up, I think Jonathan Taylor coming back is good for the Titans. because it means they're going to run the ball more. And the Titans' run defense has been really good against the Colts over the past couple of years.
Yeah. So that you hit the nail on the head. It's like they're not. I mean, the only way they've, you know, we saw the train wreck that was the Denver Colts, you know, matchup in week five on Thursday night. That was awful. Like, they should not have won that game. Russell Wilson completely collapsing and throwing an interception in the end zone is the only reason, like, any good team wins that game. But the Colts managed to get a win, and then they completely diverted from their plan and went all passing. And so now we're back to where they were in week four when they had one win and they'd only beaten the Chiefs because of that fluke game. And they've got two more wins under their belt, but they're really, you know, theoretically they're the same team. So are they going to come out and throw it 60 times? I mean, maybe. Like, I don't know that they can say things were working better when we were trying to run Jonathan Taylor 20 times, but I also don't know how you can justify saying, well, we completely got away from that because our super old, super high-priced quarterback can only run an offense where he gets to throw 60 times. Because I would like to think that Shane Bowen and Mike Vrabel are smart enough to say, okay, they're going to try to run crossers. Let's build the defense to stop crossers, because we're not going to build it to stop the deep ball. Like, we've already screwed that up. So at least don't give them both things. And, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know what the Colts want to be, and I don't think they do either. And I think as soon as they start running the ball and it doesn't work, they'll say, we should be throwing the ball. Or as soon as they throw the ball and they throw an interception, or Matt Ryan has another, you know, strip sack or whatever, it's going to be, why didn't we run it with Jonathan Taylor? Like, fans were booing when they went down 14-3 against the Jaguars when they were at home, and that, you know, they're booing in the stands when, you know, it was like the second quarter or something. And I'm not saying we've never seen Titans fans do that before, but what I'm saying is, like, there's no way this fan base is going to be happy either way. So going on the road in a hostile environment and dealing with the Titans, who have a week of rest, like, that seems like a nightmare recipe, because I don't think they're confident in anything they're doing. So I don't know.
Yeah, honestly, I'm pretty confident heading into this game. I'm not going to say there's no way the Titans lose. There absolutely is. Division games are always tricky. The Colts keep winning these, like, disgusting games. They've done it several times. They even tied against the Texans in a really gross game. They probably should have lost that one, but they didn't. They're kind of resilient. I don't know how or why. Their defense kind of keeps them in games, in some of these games. So I could definitely see them possibly pulling off this upset, but the Titans should handle their business. Vrabel off a bye or a mini bye, which is like after Thursday Night Football. I think he's 8-1. With the only loss coming in the Bengals playoff game. So that should be a pretty good sign. And the Titans were able to use the bye to get a little bit healthy. They were dealing with a lot of injuries, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Should be able to get some of those guys back, and I think that'll really help. Plus Derrick Henry, fresh. You know, he was playing the best ball of his career before the bye week. Now he gets an extra week of rest to go against the Colts, who he's always played very well against. I would feel pretty confident as a Titans fan. Plus, they're playing at home. They already beat the Colts on the road, so they should be in good shape. If they come away with wins these next 2 weeks against the Colts and then the Texans, they should be wins. I mean, anything can happen, but they should be wins. They'll be 5-2, which, did anyone see that one coming? Well, we kind of did. We said this was the stretch. They should have won these games, even though it seemed crazy at the time. And we thought we were a little bit crazy saying it, but we went through the schedule and we pretty much gave them all of these wins. We said, I think maybe they might have split with the Colts, which they possibly still could. But man, being 5-2 heading into that primetime game with the Chiefs, then you get the Broncos, who are a disaster, the Packers, who have zero identity, and then the Bengals, who have a really bad O-line. They're in good shape. Titans are in really good shape, I think, if they get these next couple of wins these next 2 weeks, and it all starts with the Colts.
Yeah, you know, when we looked at this schedule at the beginning of the year, like we always do, like when it comes out, it's like you look and you're like, all right, Giants.
It always looks scary. Yeah. It always looks scary.
You know, it's like Giants easy win. No, Bills, like, we're going to, like, that's going to be a tough game. No, they just absolutely, you know, kicked our heads in. Raiders, that you know, they're going to be tough because they have Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow, and they added Davante Adams, and they have Max Crosby, and, you know, beat them. Then it's like, like an early trip to the Colts. That's going to be tough. Nope. And then it's like Commanders kind of were what we thought they were. Then it's like, you know, now we're in where we are now, where I remember at the time being like, I can't believe we're wasting that bye week of early preparation or whatever on the Colts. But, you know, honestly, like the Colts look bad. And so, you know, it's not super advantageous, but at the same time, this looks very much like a year where you just focus on getting into the playoffs and worry after that, because you don't have to try to get the number one seed, because it's not like there's a bunch of great teams that you know, you're going to play against in the playoffs anyway. So, you know, beat your guys in your division. Okay. Like, then you have the Texans who, you know, the Texans always play us weird. It doesn't matter who's their quarterback or whatever. So, you know, we'll deal with that. And the Chiefs are always hard, but you know, then you've got Broncos who are I don't even know if I should say semi-collapsing. Like, I was watching Benjamin Albright's like Twitter feed this morning, and he was tweeting a lot about it, and people are like constantly asking him, like, can they fire Hackett? Like, when's the earliest they can get out of the Russell Wilson contract? And then Russell Wilson says he has a hamstring injury and there's a back injury, and reportedly he's day to day. It's like, all these little things. And like, they lost their left tackle for, I don't know if Bowles is out for the year. I think he's out for the, it's a long time either way. And so it's like, that's a big issue for them, whatever. Then you have the Packers who are also struggling, and it's like the Jets just went and, you know, beat them pretty much up and down the field. Then you have the Bengals who you host the Bengals, and it, you know, they lost their big nose tackle for a long time, but I don't know how long he's out for, and their run defense hadn't been great this year. And then you've got the Eagles, which looks like it's going to be an absolute nightmare. But then you have the Jaguars, the Chargers who are banged up. Then you host the Texans, you host the Cowboys, and then you go on the road to Jacksonville. And it's like, they're not all like, they're not all easy, because there's no easy games because you don't get to play the Panthers. But at the same time, it's like the Texans should be pretty, like, you know, just knowing what we know about the Texans, you know, and whether the Titans play up to that, I don't know, because they did lose to the Texans last year and they lost to the Jets last year. So I'm going to be careful with what I say, but it's like Texans, Jaguars, broken Chargers, you know, the Bengals, Broncos, and Packers are worse than we thought. It's like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what the second place team in the AFC South, like, will have win total wise, but I talked to Tyler Rowland, and I made a bet with him the other day where I don't think that the Colts will have 6 wins by week 15, because that's the end of their bye week. And like, everybody else in the AFC South schedule is much harder than the Titans at this point. So, you know, like I said, we'll see what happens, but it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, 7 and 10 is the second place total in this division. Like, I don't know. Like, we'll see. But if the Titans can just take care of their business these next 2 games, get to 5-2, if they can just take care of the game this week and be 4-2, like, it'll be a big leg up on an AFC where the middle class continues to, you know, fill up, and there's just very few teams with 1 or 2 losses.
Yeah, I think the Colts could probably get to 8, maybe 9 wins, just because they don't go away. They're like really pesky. They're kind of annoying. But yeah, that they're not very good. Unfortunately, neither are a lot of these AFC teams. And I agree with you. It's really just about getting into the playoffs this year and then seeing what happens. If the Titans win their division right now, they would host the Jets in the first playoff game. And then the teams under the Jets the teams that aren't division winners right now are the Chargers, the Jets, the Colts, the Bengals, the Dolphins, the Patriots, the Jaguars, Broncos, Browns, Steelers, like, I would take the Titans' chances against probably any of those teams. You know, I'm not too scared of any of them. It's possible the Titans could lose to any of them because that's who the Titans are. But I don't know. The Titans are good enough to beat most of them. And in the playoffs, anything can happen. So we'll see. Hopefully they just come out of the bye, get the win against the Colts, and then we'll take it week by week. But the Titans are in a really good place for now, I think. Getting those three wins before the bye week was pretty big. So we're going to take our second ad break here, and then we're going to come back and wrap up with Stop the Nonsense. Welcome back into Stop the Nonsense. No. Welcome back into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Titans podcast. We're about to do Stop the Nonsense. Will, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so I'll keep with the Tennessee versus Alabama theme. I'm not going to go into every tweet that everybody sent because there were a lot of Alabama fans who just, you know, to their credit, just assumed.
So
that,
cocky.
They assumed that Alabama would win. I'm not going to talk about all the Alabama fans who are crying about officials and all that because of the penalties, even though they said they had something like 17 penalties. Well, first off, 12 of those were false starts because you kept moving before the ball was snapped. So it's not like they're subjective penalties. Like, anyway, I won't go too far into that. What I will say is there's something about Henry To'oto'o, who used to be the Vols linebacker and who transferred to Alabama after, you know, the coaching change happened, and, you know, whether he, you know, whether he took whether he got benefits and like was, you know, whatever happened there, like there's something that rubs me wrong about him doing a promo for the Alabama-Tennessee matchup and talking about how, you know, the 100,000 people like screaming is like music to my ears and all that kind of stuff. Like that, there's something that makes it so good when you fail as badly as he and the defense did. And, you know, he made, you know, they made this video and he did the narration, you know, clunkily and poorly, but he got through it. And then at the end he said, it's nothing personal, it's just business. And the number of Vols players who posted videos of themselves saying it's nothing personal, it's just business, you know, watching him completely miss on tackles or like jump over the top late, like when he was like the fourth guy there, like just be ineffective and emasculated in front of the Tennessee fans screaming at him as he had five tackles and no, you know, dropped an interception that like ricocheted off people. And just, I'm not going to say he completely, you know, fumbled the game away, because, you know, there are several Alabama defenders that did that. You know, nobody could stop anybody on the Vols offense, but there's something about that that feels very Stop the Nonsense to me, is them using a former Vol player to try to get in the Vols heads when you already had that advantage. You had 15 years. You didn't need to kind of spike the ball, but you did give them just a little bit of extra motivation. And that's why your future top three pick and Will Anderson got bullied the whole game. And that's why To'oto'o looked like he should be a day three prospect. You know, it's like getting cooked like that after you talk smack that you don't deserve is awesome. There's no better word for it. So I'll just leave it at that. So my Stop the Nonsense is To'oto'o daring to even do the voiceover for that.
You gotta love when stuff like that backfires. It's funny, especially when it happens to teams like Alabama. So good stuff there. I have a couple of Stop the Nonsenses. They're not outrageous, but one of them is Robbie Anderson, who I don't like that guy. Like, he rubs me the wrong way. He really always has. He always throws temper tantrums on the sidelines. He did it with the Jets. He's done it with the Panthers. This Sunday, he literally starts arguing with the coaches. Then he takes to Twitter and says that his character was being questioned or something like that. Gets kicked out of the game by interim head coach Steve Wilks, which, good for Steve Wilks. Why does he have to deal with that, you know? Get him out of there. And then the next day, he gets traded to the Cardinals. And then people are acting like this is a huge move for the Cardinals. Why? He's not good. Like, I don't know what he has to do in the NFL for us to realize that he's, like, just a guy. He's so mediocre. He's fast. That's it. He's like a complete one-trick pony. All he does is ever complain. He doesn't come across as a very good guy or good teammate. He's also like 150 pounds. He's just, I don't know. I just don't like that guy. And I don't know. I don't want to see him have too much success. I don't think he will, because the Cardinals are a stop the nonsense in and of themselves. They're a complete dumpster fire, even after they extended Cliff Kingsbury and their GM for like 7 years. I don't understand that organization. But anyway, that's one of my stop the nonsenses. The other one happened in the Monday night game. That whole game was really nonsense. I don't know what that was. It wasn't football. Like I said before, every Broncos game devolves into just a carnival of terrible sports. I don't know. I don't know what was going on in this one. I was rooting for a tie. Didn't get there. Kind of sucked. We even had to watch overtime. But something happened in this game. Aside from the coaches just being completely inept at everything, having no idea how to call plays, having no idea how to manage the clock, just complete buffoonery. But in overtime, I don't know if you saw this. It was like second and 19 or something. I don't know what it was. The Chargers were backed up. Herbert throws a moon ball to the sideline to Mike Williams. And I swear to God, he caught this. He caught this ball. He like barely clipped the turf before he went out of bounds with like his toe. And everyone was like, hello, we think you got this. And it looked like a catch, and nothing happened. Nothing. It didn't get reviewed at all. They showed a like very slow-mo in-depth replay, and it legitimately looked like he caught the ball. I don't think Brandon Staley could have challenged. I don't think you can challenge in overtime. I'm not totally sure about that rule, but like, why didn't the NFL? Hello? Why didn't they review this? Like, it was a huge turning point in the game. The Chargers ended up winning anyway, but that could have been disastrous if the Broncos ended up winning and they didn't review that. So that was super weird. It was also a just terribly officiated game as well. They kept calling number 27 on the Broncos for pass interference. Some of them were just not pass interference at all. So my stop the nonsense is really just the NFL as a whole. I've talked about it at length on this podcast, really, but there's just a lot of bad stuff going on around the NFL right now.
Yeah, and that, like, you can, like, my recollection, I hadn't pulled it up, but you can see, like, his toe drag and those, like, beads come up behind. It's like, you can, like, there's visual evidence that, like, he had both feet in. Like, I don't know why they didn't, like, challenge that or look at it either. Like, that was...
Titans fans would have lost their S-word if that happened to us.
Absolutely. Like, that was, you know, that was a bad game just in general. But I don't know, like, I swear, and maybe they've said something in the offseason, but didn't it seem like there were 100 more, like, buzzes down from the league office or whatever last year, like that they had like a booth review, like a booth initiated review that would like constantly happen. Like it seemed like that was a big part of like the implementation. Like I feel like it was like emphasized last year. Like they're like, don't worry about throwing your challenge flags. Like we'll initiate booth reviews and all that. And I swear there's been like 3 booth reviews that I've seen. And maybe that's because it hadn't happened in Titans games or in primetime games. And when I watch the other games on the condensed version or the all 22 or whatever, they don't talk about it. But it seems like last year, like there were so many, like, is that a catch? Is it a non-catch? Like, a quick booth review would like let you know. And now it feels like that's just out of the equation. And I don't know what's up with that, but you're right. It like as if the officiating needed any more help looking bad, like just kind of picking and choosing when you call pass interference and who's going to be your primary target of pass interference. And then not really knowing what a catch looks like. It's been a rough year for them.
It definitely has. And you're right. They did call down very often last season. And this season, it's just gone by the wayside. I guess they're focusing all their attention on spotting players who have concussions nowadays. And now everyone gets ruled out. I don't know if you've noticed. If someone even goes into the concussion protocol during a game, they're immediately ruled out, which, okay, good, I guess that they care about concussions and the actual health of players, but they don't always have concussions, so it's a very very fine line that they're not towing very well. And I don't know, there's just it's been a really weird season for the NFL and their optics as a whole. So we'll see, man. We'll see if any of this has any repercussions. That'll do it for us for this week. We'll be back next week to recap the game against the Colts. Hopefully the Titans come away with another division win, and we can talk about good things instead of negative things. So for Matias, for Will, thanks for tuning in, and remember to always stop the nonsense.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.